Here.
Congressman Baker. Congressman Norris.
Here.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Here.
Congresswoman Pratt.
I'm here.
Congressman Shaw.
Here.
I was like, what's that?
I thought I was president, Congressman Mason.
Huh? I used to be, but I'll just.
Well, we could, you can still settle this.
I'll settle.
I spaced you, I was like, wait a minute, I'm on appropriation. We were here, Allison and I went to.
So Congressman Mason, could you pray for us?
Oh, yes, thank you. And God's will come, come to the change, all in the moment. Almighty Father God, we come this day, we say thank you again for allowing us to gather. Be with us, and we ask for your divine guidance, Almighty Father, to our minds and our hearts and our soul, our invisible being, Almighty Father, guide us as we speak and we think and we talk of things and that we hear with open minds, open ears, open hearts, to the things to be said here throughout this afternoon at this meeting, Almighty Father. When we talk about the things that, that drive us and the dollars and cents that, that come our way, Almighty Father, and we make decisions and think about these things and have inclusion, Almighty Father, from our hearts for our people, Almighty Father. Thank you for all these things in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Here we have minutes to approve. It's from October 3rd.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the committee minutes from October 3rd as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion made by Congresswoman Whitehorn, seconded by Congresswoman Pratt, to approve the minutes of October 3rd. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say yes.
Yes.
Approve, say no. Minutes from October 3rd are approved. So we had several items come up that affect, I think, appropriations, in my opinion, and so I thought we should touch on all those items so that the committee would have an idea of what other monies have come in that might affect appropriations for any requests that are coming in for the special session. So the first item I have on is free work costs, and I'd like to ask the comptroller, the treasurer, whoever would want to discuss those pre-award cost payment and its source and where it will be deposited.
Chad?
Yeah.
You want me to join up?
Please.
I'd love to come up. That'd be ideal.
Okay.
Congresswoman Edwards is on the phone. Hello, Congresswoman.
Hello, thank you for including me.
I don't know when you came on, but we're waiting for the comptroller and treasurer to come up to the table. The first item on the agenda is pre-award cost payment.
Is the pre-award announcement in the IHS sometime last year was $245,000. It's part of this set of documents that we're stamping. Amendment number 12.
Okay.
$1,424, and that amount is consistent with what supplied to IHS for the real-world costs associated with negotiating and entering into the compact for the discharge calcium plant. They approved that on September the 30th and transferred the funds to the nation. So they were deposited to the nation's general fund as part of a normal ATO payment from IHS.
Okay, so right now they're being deposited in the general fund. So the total amount was how much again that was the payment?
For the pre-award amount was $245,424.
The amount the nation actually received was
$91,756 on this ATO. Because you'll notice below the $245,000 number, there's a negative $153,000. So what IHS did was they netted the amount they owed us with an amount that we owed back to them for an overfunding of contract support costs through the funding, through the normal funding agreement. And all again, behind here is all the providence on how they calculated that. I can go through it if you want. It's pretty complicated.
I'm sorry, maybe the committee wants to. As you may recall, it had to do with the fact that when our multi-year funding agreement was negotiated, our official indirect cost rate was 26 or 26.5%. During the next 6 to 12 months, the chief set it at 19%. And so it resulted basically in an overpayment of indirect costs to us over the first year of the multi-year funding agreement. Which was brought out at the time that it was potentially an intended consequence of changing it in the mid-year before the National Business Center had officially approved it. And so this is basically an overpayment because we had used a higher indirect cost rate at the time. And so now they want that money back. And the way they sought to get the overpayment back was deducted from the total of the career work cost. So all we really got was $91,000. I did make the statement, though, that we still received the 150 whatever thousand. We still got that, but that didn't have to go back. Plus, we paid 150, but we just had to pay it back because it was overestimate or over projection. So, really, the next question is, what happens to the 91,000? You say it's in the general fund. It's not appropriate. It's my understanding. Not that appropriate. It's now. There's been a lot of discussion this week and last week about. You know, what is this money? It's a reimbursement. Some people say, well, it's a reimbursement for costs, expenditures related to the compact, pre-award. The award is the multi-year funding agreement. As you may remember, this Congress recently passed NCA 16, I believe it was 102. There's a copy here in your packet that basically sets forth that health-related revenue is restricted to health-related expenditures and administration. I think it would behoove you if you could find that particular document there. It's in your packet, copy of that bill. And maybe two bills in your packet.
16-102.
16-102. There's three copies of pre-Gerber bill. One's
to restrict revenue raised from the delivery of health services to expenditures on health-related services.
Thank you. And as you can tell from this Amendment 12, that's actually a type of contract support cost. It says, it actually even references here, and it's even in the IHS manual, that pre-award cost, in fact, source startup costs, come under the heading of a contract support funding. If you look at the language in 16-102, it says essentially that the healthcare revenue shall include, upon the effective date of this act, all revenue derived from delivery of healthcare services and collection of payments due on healthcare services rendered by the Osage Nation to include, but not limited to, Indian Health Service self-governance funds, third-party revenue, direct and indirect contract support costs, and all revenue described in the current multi-year funding agreement. And my position has been, and speaking only for myself as chair of this Appropriations Committee, that law mandates that $93,000 is restricted to healthcare related services or administration for healthcare-related services. And there are others, and I'm not sure your exact position is treasurer. that's a reimbursement, and that's supposed to go to the nation back to some other part of the, for funding for the nation's uses, even if it's not healthcare related. And so that's sort of the dialogue we've had here recently. So I'd like to ask the treasurer if he would speak to that.
We look at it as though this body appropriates money, and we don't really, we don't have any mechanism for trying to restrict it. We don't even think like that.
Okay.
So it's really kind of a new deal to us.
Okay.
Because casually speaking, we would object anything.
Okay.
Congress wants to do
very
that.
Good. Mr. Cockey?
No,
okay. But I think that law was really designed to help address issues like that as they come up. Then the next question is, well, what happens to the $91,758? Is it part of projected revenue now, private projected revenue? It's new monies coming in that have not been appropriated. It's been deposited in the general fund. Does that need to be represented in a revised either tribal projected revenue or projected revenue report? $91,000 is potentially available for appropriation.
I have no problem with it.
So that's just one item. Does anyone have any opinion on that? There's just money should go as it trickles in. There are some other monies too.
Well, we take the ones with the Constitution for service.
2016 clinic third-party collections. Now, my understanding is that the clinic collected beyond the projected third-party collections for that fiscal year. I can't remember what the projection was, 1.7 or 1.8 million. That's what was used for budgeting purposes. But actually, they collected a little more than that, so somewhere around 177,000 more. So there's that revenue, and it hasn't been appropriated. I mean, it's additional revenue. It's not really federal money, nation generated by the health clinic. And so the question is, that money is currently where right now?
It is in the IHS designated fund.
Okay.
Right. Where all the other IHS monies are. They're not mixed.
Okay. And I just question asked for the committee's feedback on this. Since it's money that's come in, it's not really carryover, it's been appropriated yet. Should that also be added to the projected revenue?
Not until it's been audited.
Okay.
That was it. That was earned in FY.
Understood. Mr. Treasurer, what do you think?
I think that it's like the other money that, you know, you just make the best estimate of what you're going to do at the beginning of the year, and you can carry on, and then at the end of the year, if you're really, really good, and I've never seen it very many times where you absolutely hit what you thought you were going to hit. And it just, the game's over and you start over next year. I think it's a part of it. I wouldn't see it carrying over. I would see it just being, you did better than you estimated.
Right.
That you wouldn't just close out. When you close out the rest of the accounting numbers for the year.
Okay. But I understand your part about the audit.
Well, I think that's exactly what you said too. You said the same thing.
Would it then be considered money that's not available just yet for appropriation because it hasn't been part of the audit process yet?
The audit's going on right now, but it would be like any other money that you had left over at the end.
Okay.
And so then, of course, it goes the other way too. You might spend more than you thought you wanted to.
But again, not available for appropriation. I don't think who your debt is yet, and we won't know that all those amounts, including that one, until next June.
It would be I hope we have it to you sooner than that. We've got the auditors in right now instead of waiting around. I want to get the audit done by February the 1st if I can, and instead of waiting around like we always do.
All right, good. have any, anyone else want to weigh in on that? Comptroller Whitehorn?
Well, I think as we structure that revenue out in different categories of restricted revenues, I think that it's going to have to come back to us in an audit so we can see that that was from the healthcare system. Because OTA 16102 specifies that that revenue is restricted to healthcare. So to me, that once the audit's finished and everything washes, there's going to have to be some type of designation on that, mm-hmm. those dollars to know that if that's our healthcare money, and we're going to put it back into that.
Absolutely.
Back into that to strengthen our resolve in being healthcare providers.
Confirmation.
And all that Congressman Whitehorn has just said sounds wonderful. Is at this table, is that just talk? Is do we have that in print anywhere? Everything you just said, is that a 102 already?
It's a 102, but I don't. You want my opinion on it? I've been looking at this stuff.
Your opinion.
Okay, because I've been looking at this stuff a while, for a few days now. And I believe that we're weak on the internal. The policy and procedure that we approved back in July states that we approve the policy and procedure, the fiscal policy of the Treasury, but then also they have a part in that to present us what their procedures are with the way they handle the things that we're talking about. I think 16102 covers the law that that is a restricted fund. Now, the missing piece that I don't have is what is your procedure then when those dollars come back? Once an audit is complete, what does your office do to designate that?
Are you talking about the leftover money?
Yeah, but really what I'm talking about is not the leftover money. I'm talking about the documentation of how the Treasury Department handles that at the closeout of the audit, what's your dates and milestones, would ideally be in your procedure and process that I don't dictate to you. That's your office's. But your policy states that I'm supposed to be able to review what that internal process is. And to my knowledge right now, I don't know that that's documented in black and white how you guys handle that process. So that's my answer. I think that's the question that you were asking. Is that all written down? Are we covered by the law?
I'm thinking with the speaker right here, I've said many times, what is our congressional intent when we voice and say things? But also, just from some experiences of the past, know that isn't in print, it doesn't exist. We can sit and talk and share things here at the table. Like I said, that's when I asked the question, do we have everything we said, which sounded really great, in print anywhere?
Well, our portion of it is in print. Our expectation of them to have that process, the procedure written out, how they're going to handle the closeout of the books, that's in their courts. And as far as I know, I'm assuming it doesn't exist because I haven't ever seen a copy of it, how the policy says. So that's an assumption I'm making on my part.
Does anyone feel like the $177,000 should be handled differently than leaving it where it's currently posted? I think, was it within 2016 revenue until it's confirmed by the audit and then reported by the treasurer sometime after the audit?
One of the things you could expect from us is that at the year end, whenever all the bills are in, and we're this close to being there, we should have been there a week or so ago. Whenever all that happens, there's an accounting mechanism that closes out the expenses, and it closes out the revenues. And if it's done under, you hear this word GAAP all the time, generally accepted accounting procedures, it's done according to that. And when you have all these numbers, you're going to come up with one number. It's going to be a combination of IHS, just everything. And we can show this committee a list that really pretty quick. The auditors are here now, and they're going to make some little adjustments, I'm sure, to our stuff, but it won't be significant. So we could, but that's what we do. We follow GAAP. We follow GAAP in closing the books, and there's only one way to do it, and it's accepted by the accounting professional of the United States.
That's what Congressman would like.
And I do understand that, and I'm glad that we do follow GAAP, and that's in our policy, but being a government and then having different, you know, the executive executes the spending, the appropriations, we appropriate. So having a mechanism, I understand that the process is an accounting procedure, and it should be. Mm-hmm. But then also, it's going to have to blossom back out for us to know where we are again, that one number.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you're the department, the person that does that, that brings us, I mean, when you just hand me an audit with that one number, I'm assuming it's correct. I'm not the accountant, I don't know. But what I think needs to happen, just in my mind, is we get that audit, but then also we need to know what portion of that return revenue is a federal fund that we're going to carry over, what's tribal fund that's unrestricted that we can appropriate for anything, and what portion of that return
is just gone.
Would be restricted to healthcare purposes. I mean, it gets complicated. In my mind, it's complicated. So it's more complicated than following GAAP, which is what we need to do, and getting that one number. But to me, it has to unfold again,
mm-hmm,
back to us. And I need to lean on you for you to unfold those numbers for me, because I don't know.
We'll make a point to bring the biggest committee.
Chairman, talk to my question.
Congressman Whitehorn, I mean Edwards.
While we're on the subject of encumbrance and carryover, et cetera, my question is, we had some information from our Office of Fiscal and Performance Review that they were being asked to encumber funds from FY16 after September 30th. And I wanted to know, do we have a policy on that? Because our reaction to that was no, because after September 30th, you can't encumber funds after that date, and you also can't start moving money around in a budget when the year is closed out. So I'm wondering, do we see some? Can I get a response to why that request might have been made? And then also, we have revision accounting procedures on that, so we know in the future how to respond.
Mr. Treasurer, I'm not sure I answered your question, please. My understanding is that she has heard that there are some requests to encumber FY 2016 funds that were made after September 30th, 2016, and she is interested in whether there's a policy that actually shows that cannot be made. How are those encumbrances handled? What's the deadline, official deadline?
Well, there is a policy, there's both a policy and a procedure, of course, for the encumbrances. And specifically, I mean, I can bring it, send it.
I think you could send it out. I think that'd be sufficient.
Certainly.
It's an important topic. I'm interested in that as well. If you could research that and send it out.
Is there a written policy on your encumbrance process? That's what you guys do have?
Yes. Well, I think it would be part of the purchasing side.
Do you know of any encumbrances that can be done to talk about them?
No.
I don't
know.
And for clarification, it was brought up in the CA meeting because the chief auditor brought us information that was being asked to modify budgets that she can't do beyond VA working on that in the first place. He would be asked to move money around in the FY16 budget after the end of the fiscal year so that it could be encumbered. And we told him no way of that because the law says that you can't do that. But, you know, I just want to make sure the law and the policy are the same.
don't you send out what you have from your office, and you can see whether anything else needs to be done. It could be helpful for control.
Well, I want to follow up, because I'm thinking that what, I'm assuming this, Mr. Coffey, you can clarify it. I'm thinking what you're going to send to me is something, as a document that I already have, which is the fiscal management policy, where it talks about procurement. So there's something beyond that.
There's procedures.
There's procedures.
The policy is the broad, which you're talking about.
Well, I'm talking about.
And there's procedures, which is a combined, it's about that big, so purchasing would have a section in there that would deal with purchase orders, purchase requisitions, encumbrances, et cetera.
I would like for you to send us all of your procedures that the policy refers to, that
sure.
The executive, judicial branch, or the legislative branch can review.
Sure.
Because that's what the fiscal management policy states that we just passed.
Would you like them electronic or paper copy? It doesn't matter.
I prefer both. Okay. You give it to get it to us on a flash drive, mm-hmm. and then also a paper copy of it. That would be nice.
I could get a flash drive over today. Paper copy, someone's got to print all of them and find it, so maybe Monday, but yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Let's go ahead, and is there any control craft?
So can we discuss, I didn't write Jen's question down, but so in talking about the policy, I think she specifically asked, though, basically, is that legit to continue to spend funds after September 30th, or is it just?
There's a cutoff on September 30th, unless there's a purchase requisition, purchase order in place, in process, underway.
Right.
Then, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, because a lot of times people go on a spending frenzy the last few days, like, oh, we've got to get this, you know.
And that's why.
By September 30th. But then after that, no money should be moved around anywhere.
No money should be spent. Correct. After.
That's going to the next year.
Next year.
Right. Okay.
So, and that's why the purchasing manager sends emails out, probably starting in June, maybe July. Schedule of, if you have a purchase, you need to get the requisition to her office, my office, by, I want to say the 1st of September, because there's a process, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to buy something, her staff has to get bids, quotes, select the best, reach out, engage, make the purchase. So she can't get something on September the 28th and expect to run all those traps in 2 days. And so there is a process, and that's part of it.
Okay. So I've been a director before. I totally understand that. But you said like a purchase requisition, but can you, after September 30th, if programs have money left over, can you start moving between line items and shifting money around within your division?
To
help cover, say, something that's been a purchase acquisition has taken place for, so you know payment may not come until afterwards, but as long as that's done and that's before that's the end of September, can you take money from wherever you want, I guess, within that division, because you have division budgeting, can you continue to move that around to cover other things?
I think, if I understand what you're saying, sometimes there a budget modification would be needed if a line went over on a specific program for an authorized purchase that came through the channels prior to October 1 or September 30th, it may put a certain program over their budget line, so you may have to move money to that to cover, just like a normal course. Any other, it would be no different than any other month.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got an electric bill that puts you over by $1,000, you may have to take some travel. This is just an example, by the way,
mm-hmm.
to cover that overage, or if typically a purchase requisition, purchase order wouldn't, that wouldn't happen because that, that's all posted prior to the deal coming.
Okay, and then, my recollection as a director, I would have to make that request and I would have to sign off on that, asking for that request before any money was ever moved around within the division, is that correct?
That's typically the normal procedure is.
Does that have to happen?
For the director to make the request.
For that program to request, program, whoever's in charge of that budget, is it?
They have to approve it.
They do have to sign off.
They have to sign.
Asking for that request before anyone in accounting would ever move any money wherever. You know, like say I'm an accountant and I see, these guys are getting ready to, like you said, $1,000.
Right.
The accountants or anyone that can't just go move that around, that has to be by request.
They would typically.
Of someone approving that, saying.
They would call and say, hey, this has put you over, you need to do a budget modification to, or send in the revenue commission report to say, hey, you need to address this.
Well, I think it's in law though that they have to actually provide that in writing. So is that how that's, is that how it's done? Could you just then make a call and say, move this money around?
So if we get an invoice and it puts a program over the line, that's when the accountant would call a director and say, hey, we got an invoice for your photocopier, Rand. Mm-hmm. You're short on that line, you need to do a budget modification to get the line in for that program.
Okay, but then when my accountant calls me and says that, I would have to make a written request saying where I want that money to move to and from?
Right.
Or from and to?
Yes.
In writing, okay.
Yes. Let me just try to ask the committee if we can henceforth until at least we can try to complete our budget to try to stay on task here. All important considerations, I'm not saying they're unimportant, I'm interested in them as well, but I also want to make sure we complete our agenda as well. Is there anything else regarding the third-party collections, the sort of over-projected collections we had? Right now we're trying to wait till the process through the audit with no addition of that money to projected revenue. There is none. We'll move on to the RAMA settlement, paid to the Osage Nation, another additional source of funds that have been put in the general fund. Mr. Treasurer, could you please give us a report on that?
Sure. I think it's in your packet. Rama Navajo chapter versus Jewel. And this was an action that's taken obviously by another tribe. I'm not sure I know the details of it other than the money that the Osage, I knew all the tribes were going to share. This thing is several years old, and it settled on August the 17th, and the settlement for the Osage Nation was $960,700, and it came in.
It's been positive.
Yes.
I guess that's money that would need to go through an audit. It's money that's available, and based on your report, it would be available for appropriations.
Sure.
Perhaps some projected tribal revenue. Councilman Whiteman.
Well, does anyone at the table know, because I don't, and I should, the Roma funds, was that for contract support costs on 93638? Contracts, 638?
Contracts.
Yeah. It wasn't an IHS issue. It was general self-government.
It was BIA.
Right, okay, great.
Was it mismanagement, maybe?
No, it was inadequate contracts for
okay. Inadequate, right. Okay, that's all I needed to know.
I would think that it could go into the tribal projected revenue portion.
And one more question about those funds. A lot of times these big settlements have some type of restrictive language where a portion or percentage has to be spent on something specific. I reviewed this and didn't believe that I saw that anywhere in its language of settlement that it has any catches.
We don't see
anything like that.
Right. Okay.
The reason I put this on the agenda was one, just to confirm and to hear an official report of that. I wanted to make sure that the treasurer's office didn't feel it was some sort of reimbursement destined to be spent on other expenses. It's really general to be available for appropriation.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Potts, I really wouldn't know whether we get it or not.
Mr. Potts, what opinion do you have about where these funds should be? Should be placed with regard to projected revenue?
Mr. Chair, we've kind of talked about this, I've had a couple of conversations with the members. It's gonna be accounted for somewhere in our projections in order to be able to go out with us, just in your tribal projected revenue or your projected revenue resolution. That's for you all kind of sign.
I was looking at that, and I'm just wondering, even if you just put it in tribal projected revenue, that's a part of the total projected revenue. I don't know how you could change any of those amounts without, where you change the total amount, in which case, right now, the law requires us to it seemed like it requires to pass another resolution adjusting that amount.
I would be agreeable with that.
Yeah, so we'll look at that. So anyway, that's a nice little windfall for us. It certainly isn't going to buy us a building or anything like that, but it's $1 million.
It actually came in October, so right. In danger of being buried back in last year.
Okay.
Declare.
I see.
I don't think we intend to settle.
Okay.
Settle it or set it with Seaboard against Sweden's new income commercial this year.
So where we are right now, we have two new sources of revenue that we're needing to adjust our projected revenue total upward. At this point, do you guys see any more adjustments we need to make to that projected revenue total that you want to discuss right now? Or is that where we are on this agenda? I'd like to hear from you if there's anywhere else that needs to be adjusted.
Yeah, I think there are, and I think that's probably needs to come in email form too from our office. One specific one that I can think of in mind is a small amount that covers a donation to the museum. $4,500 for a ornament project. Obviously, it has to be appropriate, has to be added to revenue to get appropriate. We got the money, but it's got to go through these channels.
Right,
so the answer to your question is yes, and I think that a memo from my office would be warranted to the committee.
So, can I
continue,
please? Maybe it was before you got here, maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years before you were here, we created an education donation fund to, I believe that in Enbridge, when the pipeline was coming through, for 3 years they were donating $50,000 a year to the tribe for education, to further educational purposes. So what Congress did is we created an education donation fund to help us to avoid situations like that, since it was a donation. It allowed that money to be accounted for within that fund, because then we didn't know at what time of year that it would be here, and then also authorize the spending for that. I don't know that we have any other donation funds available right now in the Treasury. Do we have donation funds available? So why couldn't we utilize that?
And I've looked at that because that would be the easiest, most logical way. The paperwork that came from the donor, if you will, said grant. We're giving you this grant of $45. And so when we bounced it off folks, it says grant, not donation. So I probably misspoke when I said donation.
Okay.
The paperwork says grant.
Yeah, we do have to appropriate grants.
Yes. That answers the question. Oh, that answers the question.
Okay. A possible category would grants like that fall under projected revenue?
At that point, Mr. Chair, it would fall under, I believe, tribal revenue.
Still tribal revenue.
Unless the grant's restricted. Is it restricted for a certain item?
It's restricted for this project, the ornament project for the museum. It says that in there as well.
Anything else that you know of that needs to?
I think we've covered here. There's some federal amounts of, more discussion. There's a call over Head Start, $29,000. Since the non-tribal funds are part of the projected revenue now, that may need to be included.
Can we talk about that column right now? Because I just don't understand that. Is that just part of the agreement?
Yeah, there was a,
we had to abide by COLA, is that for the employees?
I think so, possibly the adjustment.
So the, our, so, tell me, our head start employees get COLA lift in their wages, but then they also follow the tribal merit bill also, so they kind of have a double whammy of looking at their pay scales? And why is it the tribal wouldn't try, the way we handle it, that wouldn't just go into like our merit system for those specific employees?
I'm not sure I can talk about the relationship between the federal government's COLA and our HR merit or market, so pay scale system, but the award came from the funding agency on August 24th. Presumably it was applied for or requested, and so when the paperwork came in, the director provided it to my office with the award letter, the notice of award, and incorporated that into the plan. So,
I know you're not the appropriate person to talk to about it, but it just seems to me that since we're a sovereign nation and we do administrate the Head Start funds, that they would have to be able to adjust that COLA into our process that we use for those specific employees for the purpose of adjustments. But I know you're not the right person to make those decisions.
Yeah, and I believe the amounts for the COLA are earmarked, designated for wages, obviously.
Right.
From the funding agency. The way I understand it, they're going to give you these monies, but you have to spend them in this fashion.
Right, and I understand that, but like I said, I think that it should be able to fit into our merit.
But well, and how long is that for?
Yes. I think it's just for this funding for 1 year.
Were those new monies, then, additional monies from the original grant, and then it came in separate just for COLA?
Yes. And so that's when she asked the question, if there's anything else off the top of my head, I knew that was one.
Right.
There's some others, but I believe they're already in, I need to go back and double check, I believe they're already in the projected revenue from the non-tribal side, because they're obviously counted in the total projected revenue now. But there's about six or seven grants, but I need to find out which ones are already there and which ones potentially need to be there. And that's why I said perhaps a memo that documents.
I think that would be helpful if you could try to summarize, because we try to be complete on that. It wouldn't surprise me if we forgot one and we had to allow for it later. We'll make our best effort here so that we're mindful of what we have.
Right.
Councilman Whitehorn? Okay.
I'm good. I just think there's, let's try to just adjust this projected revenue total once and not have to do it again here.
Next item is ONCA 16107, and of course that's already Osage law. If you'll bring that up, the treasurer has communicated with me as to his opinion about where the what used to be called carryover tribal funds from FY 2015 would go. He reported them to us in July. And as you can see, the language of the bill in 16107 talks about the unobligated funds in the previous fiscal year as reported by the Treasurer. And this bill was originally passed actually before the end of the fiscal year, but then it was vetoed. And then veto override was, I believe, on October 3rd. And so that's actually the date of the enactment. And so by that time, the previous fiscal year actually then was FY 2016, with September 30th it passed. On September 28th, when it was originally passed, it was 15. The time we got to the third, the veto override was undertaken and it became law, then it was 16. And so, Ms. Treasurer, if you just please, if you could summarize again how you interpret this as to which years unobligated funds are being disbursed.
I'm not sure I'd say it any better than you did.
Okay, that's
the last alternative effective date. This bill is effective upon the signature of the principal chief or upon the signature of the speaker following legislative override, and we have read the legislative override to occur on October the 4th, I believe. So right, that's the effective date. Then you go back to the language you were talking about the preceding year, it would make it work.
So that period of time to override the veto, we passed into another fiscal year so that the dates became were interpreted differently. So I have an amendment to that bill that will clarify FY 2015 so that it will get clear direction by that amendment as to, for the initial deposit, which year's unobligated funds are to be deposited. That's around $2.9 million, as I recall. And obviously, we want to, I think the congressional intent was to have those money deposited in the general fund and the treasury. And so we still want that to take place. So we'll see whether Congress chooses to pass that amendment or change it further. But I wanted the committee to know that we're aware of that. That bill hasn't been filed yet, but I want to make the attempt to add it to the call for that specific purpose. So that would, it affects potential future appropriations. That's why I thought it might be appropriate for this committee. Anyone have any questions on that? We're not discussing the legislation itself, but it does involve $2.9 million. Okay, let's see what.
Well, I'm trying to think if my discussion fits in with that or not. Because I had some things that I thought that we needed to look into, and mainly it is about the FY16 audit. There's just several things on my mind about it, but I don't know if it's appropriate for this meeting, or if we're going to have another meeting to talk about it. I don't know if it fits in with this
category. Probably because we revisit the encumbrance piece as well as the perhaps accounting procedures.
Because I wanted to make a motion that just because of the things that we discussed at this meeting, some budget modifications happening without the
I may have to do another meeting.
Right, without the knowledge of the gaming commission, they moved $55,000 across the division budgets. There are some other things related to that we just need to get information about. Namely, from the auditors that are here right now, and also the auditor has not been approved by Congress that they're using. And the Constitution clearly states that we choose the auditor that audits the nation. And we have an auditor now that I didn't have any part of choosing. So I guess we need to have another meeting.
So right now the next meeting is actually at the second day of the special session on the 29th. I don't know if anyone has a session. We can be meeting on the first day. I know a lot of times we don't set meetings that day. There are meetings in the office. On the 28th. So we have the option of that afternoon. Wide open. That today.
Okay.
And then I don't know if we'll be assigned any legislation, but I felt like we needed to map out a time for that. So the second day, the 29th or Tuesday, I've got a 3 to 4:30 time set out.
Right. Well, I have a bunch of information that I'll go ahead and send the committee that I have compiled with what the law states and what I feel like is not happening. That would help us have some understanding of where we're going.
How would you suggest that I be worded on the agenda?
Budget modification process, encumbrance process, and it's my understanding we're going to get this policy so we can see what the policy states, how they handle it. So we'll have that information released to me. Also, I have a request that we
would anyone feel that, would anyone agree that all of those items are within this committee's jurisdiction? Including the, anything related to the audit? Just make sure that I'm soliciting.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, very good. All right, well, I'll hold this meeting for the first half of the night, probably 1:30. Counsel and press.
Adjourn.
Motion's made to adjourn, second. All right, all in favor of adjourn, say yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel and press.